Welcome to the Building Manager Podcast. This is episode 7. I'm your host, Matt Osborne. A big thanks for everyone who's been taking part in the podcast most recently. And of course, for all the listeners out there who's been enjoying the podcast about building management industry. Podcasts are proudly recorded through Anchor by Spotify and released onto a number of different channels that I'm sure you can follow along. This week's podcast, well, I've got a fabulous interview all the way from across the ditch in New Zealand with Brady Williams. Brady is the Managing Director of Active Building Management. Brady will introduce himself in the podcast and tell you a little bit about how New Zealand operates their building management services. No doubt, very similar to the way that we operate things here in good old Australia. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. I'll see you on the other side. Well, g'day Brady. Welcome to the Building Manager Podcast. And I'm absolutely thrilled to have another industry leader, particularly from another country like New Zealand, on the show. You wouldn't mind giving our listeners just a brief summary on, you know, how you established your successful business of active building management and maybe just a little bit of your background. That'd be great.
It's always good to have a chat to like-minded people. You talk to other people about what we do and their eyes tend to roll back or glaze over or whatever, so it's nice to have a chat with someone that shares the industry and the experiences with us.
Thank you.
Active was sort of started, we turned 15 this year, so we've been operating since 2006. Prior to that, my wife Kylie and I worked in the industry for about 3 years.
Okay.
And we were doing a combination of property and building management, and we soon realized that the main focus was on the property management, so the little boxes within the big box, so to speak.
Yeah.
We thought, oh, there's nothing really around that's looking after the entire asset, you know. So we set up Active in 2006 with one building, which is still with us today, which is pretty cool. Just kind of snowballed from there. We had one, and then we had two, and then four, and it just kept on growing to the point we're at now, where we manage just over 100 buildings around Auckland City, and we have a team of about 60 staff across the various services we provide. So, back in those days when we first started out, it was more a case of the building manager was the old retired grumpy guy with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, leaning on a broom, and never answering his phone. So, we quite quickly changed that, and I'm sure you can attest to that as well. But we just changed the perception, I think, because we were still quite young then. A lot of these guys were like our granddad, who we were competing against. We managed to get ourselves in there and change the way that they were perceived, and just provide a service and smile and answer your phone and do what you say you do. So we gained traction pretty quickly.
No, well done. And outside of just standard building management, what other sort of services do you offer?
Yep, so we also do cleaning, grounds or garden maintenance.
Okay.
We have after hours or security patrols as well. So we kind of saw that there was all these services that kept popping up at the buildings, and we thought, oh, well, we're kind of doing these anyway, but let's see if we can expand it. And all of a sudden we went from having one department to five, and that defined our service model, because they tend to be quite FM related services anyway, but we chose to bring ours in-house rather than subcontract everything out, which is more the commercial model.
Yeah, it sounds to be pretty common, definitely over here anyway, to some degree. In the, I guess, the letting management side of things, it's not really that common to subcontract things out, but certainly I've seen it within the building management industry. Just you touched on it there, but talking about industry standards, look, to me, they're vitally important because they show to clients how your business leads with integrity, and it really seems that's exactly what you're doing there with your 100 sites, so congratulations. And I've got to say that I really admire, particularly your community awareness. After reviewing your website, you're giving back to the community, so mate, that's absolutely brilliant. So how do you educate your team to ensure that those standards are maintained?
Yeah, I mean, it's an ongoing process. You know, it's when you've got a big team, and at times we can have fairly, you know, fairly reasonable turnover with staff as well, because face it, this industry is not for everyone. No. And some people dip their toe in and try it out and think that it's, you know, it's a bit much, but you get people that stick around and love it and do a great job at it. And yeah, it's up to us, you know, as directors of the company and our senior staff to you know, to provide opportunities or resources or education for our team. We think it starts though with hiring really great people. I mean, you know, we've got a great bunch of people on the team at the moment, and we've found over the years we've made an emphasis on, you know, constantly trying to get the best people that we can. You can find that, you know, the better the people are, the better they get the role, they get the industry, and they tend to stick around, and it provides a more consistent service. We look for people that usually have some sort of background in property. They maybe they might have done property management or some service industry. Like, we've had a few people recently because of COVID that have come out of service industries like restaurants or say rental car companies, or, you know, just where they provide, they understand customer service, and that goes a long way. We've had different sort of trade people over the years as well, because they obviously have an affinity with buildings and things. So part of our ongoing education of our team is, I guess it's done pretty casually, but we have regular meetings, and we bring in industry experts or, you know, contractors that we work with, say from the lift industry or the fire protection industry, and we get those people to speak to our team. And, you know, quite often there's a few like real diamonds of information that come out of those sorts of interactions between the teams. So, yeah. But also probably in the last year, we've decided to focus a lot more on staff development and performance. Just in the past year to our team, that focus on development. So we take our team who we know needs a bit of a leg up with information or you know, understanding of the role. And so there was a development manager role that we implemented. And that carried on to what we term now as a performance manager role. So we've got a performance manager who keeps an eye on the team and, you know, just goes through any of their weak points and tries to upskill them. So, it's an ongoing process. It's something we're learning every day, you know. Even we are still after 15 years. So,
Look, if you're not learning something every day, then there's something not quite right in my experience. And, you know, there's something that I've just recently discovered that actually has been around for a while in the Australian Building Management Accreditation. And I was actually really excited to read about the possibility or the development of a New Zealand program. And, you know, that's possibly something, you know, that could be introduced down the track. But, you know, but that might be another discussion at another time. But, look, I understand that there are some similarities also with building management industry to Australia, such as, you know, your body corporates, compliance regulations and so on. Talking about accreditation, what sort of accreditation standards then do you set for your building managers?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because at present we don't really have an accreditation. And over the years, it's something that we've often thought about, like, you know, do we go down this track and set something up? And I've talked to several people and we've kind of almost got there, but it kind of falls by the wayside as you end up just focusing on your own business and providing a great service. There's a couple of examples that came to mind was when someone comes into the company, we put them through, I don't know if you have it in Australia, but we've got an organization over here called SiteSafe, and they provide a whole lot of like sort of health and safety training and accreditation and things. So we make sure we do the basic SiteSafe passport. And then there's also the FMA. We've got FMA, but they tend to be more commercial focused with their approach. And we tried myself and another building manager back in a long time ago now, about 2010. We tried to get in with the FMA NZ and say, look, you guys have got the FM side of things with your commercial buildings, but there's nothing for residential. And really, we do a very similar job. Aside from maybe they have more involvement with the financial aspect of running a building. That fell by the wayside too. They weren't really interested in the residential cousin across the fence or you know, in the next door building. It's really just those two that I mentioned about SiteSafe and FMA and Z, if they're interested in joining that as a member. But I'd love to see something that is an accreditation over here, because I think it'd go a long way to weeding out the cowboys you know, and having an industry standard that we can aspire to, which I think would also give us some credibility when we're dealing with, you know, other people in the industry, like our committees or even other property professionals, like yep. lawyers and surveyors and what have you. You know, they kind of talk to us like we're not really, like we don't really know that much about what we do. But in essence, we know a heck of a lot. And but I just think it needs to be some way recognised in a more formal way.
Yeah, similarly, I think you mentioned there about occupational health and safety type of thing. So we've got WorkSafe over here. So, or in Victoria, for example, it's Safe Work Victoria, but then you've got WorkSafe Australia. So there's sort of, there's different legislations, sadly, in different states. However, they really try and work together as a team around specifics. In fact, I was attending a webinar this morning from WorkSafe Victoria, and you know, talking about swims and electrical safety and just general safety standards. So yeah, very, very similar. And yes, we've got FMA over here. You know, I think like you, I'd love to see this accreditation and have or establish at least, you know, a building management association. So maybe that's something, you know, we could certainly look into, Brady, and try and get this building management association A and Z or something like that, you know. So perhaps we can work together on that, and I'll get in contact with you later down the track so we can have really good discussions on it if you're interested.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, cool. I think it's to be part of something like that, you know, it'd be sort of groundbreaking in our small industry over here. But you know, it's a growth industry, so now's a really good time to do that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
You know, 10 years ago, which is, but
well, you know, it's you're right. It should have happened probably more than 10 years ago, from my experience. And you know, you can have all these wonderful different accreditations, but you know, I guess, as a facilities manager, and that's what I'm about to discuss with you, it's so different to being a building manager over here, at least anyway. So, you know, how do these roles sort of connect with your business, facility manager and building manager?
Yeah, well, essentially over the course of the time that we've been in the industry, we've always, you know, called ourselves building managers.
Yep.
What we've found over here is that FM, facility manager, is more of a term that relates to the guys that manage the commercial buildings, like the office buildings, you know, factories or
hospitals.
Exactly. So they're always thought of in a more professional light because they walk around with a suit and tie, and you know, they look the part. And whereas the building manager come out of the residential industry over here, and it's kind of evolved from what they used to call a caretaker.
Yep.
You know, and that's kind of where it came from. It's where our business started, to be honest. You know, we were just looking after the building. We were taking care of the building.
Mm.
And as it's progressed and evolved, the services changed to a point now where a lot of our guys operate, you know, on a same, if not sometimes higher level than the FM guys. I mean, now the building managers are more keen to roll up their sleeves and get their hands dirty if they have to.
Yep.
Possibly the FM guys sit behind a call center and you know, just send out subcontractors as required. But in saying that, over the years we've as our team's grown, we've taken a few people out of the FM industry, and you know, they actually like our environment better because we have a fairly a family environment where we come from, where there's a lot of the FM companies, the bigger companies, which I won't name here, but
that's fine.
We know who they are.
Yeah.
But they tend to be more corporate, you know, and we're a family business. So similar job, nicer environment, hopefully, and a happier team at the end of the day. But I think we do very similar roles, except for the financial aspect of it, which over here and probably in the strata community in Australia is taken care of by the body corporate or the strata manager.
Yep.
You know, they tend to be the ones paying the bills and holding the purse strings and,
yep,
you know, contributing to the budget, etc. So,
spot on.
But yeah, those are the two sort of definitions or differences that I see with the role.
Yeah, you're right. I guess I've had the opportunity to be involved in both roles, and actually, to some degree, because the FM role for me was in that sort of mixed use site, I was really more involved with a combination like the hands-on maintenance and, you know, I guess because of my background, I was able to assist with some of the, you know, reviewing of information from the strata managers and communicating with them. And so, a bit of a unique role, but I guess sometimes it really depends on your experience and what you know. But I know each residential building, whether it's mixed use or purely residential, requires a committee and body corporate in New Zealand, but what sort of interactions are expected of your building managers for the committee and body corporate management? I would imagine they're pretty similar to what they are here, but you know, it'd be good to hear from you about the sites in NZ.
Yeah, so we define the that relationship between ourselves, the committee, and the body corp manager. That's the key relationship to managing these buildings, and we've come to refer to it over the years as the three-legged stool. So you know, you've got these three entities who you know, try and, you know, we work together to prop up this building and make it run. It's interesting because every sort of building and every management company that we work with, they've got different ways of doing things. Like, there's no consistent standard in any of our buildings that, you know, we can't go, oh, we do this here, so we're going to do the same thing there, because it's everyone involved wants something done differently, or the report to be different, or what have you. So, yeah, it's trying to take all these things that we're responsible for and standardize them, but also customize them. So that's a battle at times. But we find that some body corporate management companies over here really take the lead quite strongly with running these body corps, which can be quite interesting.
Okay.
Historically, it's been problematic. There's been some quite big personalities involved in the industry over here over the years that have really pushed a few people's buttons. It's people and it's personality driven, isn't it?
Spot on.
And as much as we talk about managing buildings, we're actually managing people and expectations.
Yeah,
exactly right.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's but yeah. So we're talking the same language. So and you get some body corp managers or committees want us to have a heck of a lot of involvement, and some just want to hear from us when there's a problem.
Mm.
So, you know, somewhere in between that is the ideal mix. Largely, committees over here are really good, and they want you to be involved, and we want to be involved, and we want to help them try and push their buildings forward. So it's interesting, depending on which company that we're working with, they'll have a different way of operating and a different way of managing the committee as well. And quite often the committees are quite happy to be managed, but some of the bigger buildings that have got some more commercially minded people, they actually run their committee like a board, because they're running a business essentially. And that's, to me, that's the key, is that realizing that some of these bigger buildings, and each building is like running a business. It's not just running a building.
Yeah.
You've got quite large budgets in some of these buildings, and you've got people who might necessarily be skilled in running a budget or a business, and they've got to make big decisions at times that can affect people's livelihoods, or they're dealing with hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars. So it can be quite an interesting relationship and dynamic at times.
Yeah, definitely. And I can assure you it's much the same over here, particularly when you get multiple buildings within one site. And so then you start getting all of these additional owners corporations, as I guess is in Victoria at least, or body corporates. So, you know, for example, in one site, you might even have as many as 10 different committees. And then, you know, you'll have the overarching committee, I guess, that makes the final decisions around common property within those sites. So, it can be a bit tricky. And, you know, I think you hit it on the head there when you talk about communicating and, you know, being able to show and identify that you know exactly what you're doing and how you're doing it. It sounds to me though, Brady, you're doing a pretty good job having, you know, all of those sites. So keep it up, whatever seems to be working for you. Yeah. I mentioned, you know, that there was talking about compliance. So, you know, especially to essential services, really imperative in order to have a successfully functioning building. And we spoke about that just then. What compliance regulations then do your building managers have to fulfill that might be different to Australia, if you're aware of any?
Yeah, I think your industry is light years ahead of where we're at here. We've been to Australia on several occasions, and we're in Melbourne a couple of years ago, having a look around, just comparing. And you know, the stuff we saw over there was sort of mind-boggling compared to what we were doing back here. And I was thinking, crikey, you know, we've got a lot of work to do if we want to keep up with our Australian cousins across the Tasman there.
Right.
But the three main ones that stand out for us and that we get our team to focus on is obviously the building Warren of Fitness. You may or may not have the same type of scenario over there.
Yep.
And with that, we're responsible for doing the monthly owner's inspection. So means of escape really is about it. And all the rest are done by IQPs. The long-term maintenance plans, which strangely enough only came into effect in New Zealand in 2010, 2011, when they revamped the Unit Titles Act. So that's just a forecasting plan and you know, putting a dollar value against it. And we have to make sure that plan is followed as closely as it can be, and it's updated every 3 years. So it's always got a minimum of 10 years on the plan.
Okay.
So that helps with our, you know, with our forward planning and budgeting and things. The ridiculous thing over here at the moment is that it's compulsory to have a plan, but it's not compulsory to, you can opt out of funding it. So it kind of is this document that, you know, is often filed away in the bottom drawer and gathers dust, but over the years, people can see the value in having a long-term plan, and it's, you know, for an asset that's worth several, maybe tens or hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the last one really that is a focus, and it's a day-to-day focus, is the health and safety, the workplace health and safety. And that, again, only came into play back in 2015 when they decided to revamp the Health and Safety Act and call it the Workplace Health and Safety Act.
Yeah, right.
And so that's an ongoing, you know, daily thing to make sure that we're providing a safe environment for our staff first and foremost, you know, the residents and the contractors that we engage to work at these buildings. So
okay.
Yeah, those are like the three sort of main areas that we focus on from a compliance point of view or an essential service point of view.
Mm. So the IQP, internal quality personnel or something like that, is it? Or
no, it's independently qualified person.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So you have to be nominated by someone who's already an IQP. You have to do some courses, pay a bit of money to the council, as the council are good at doing. and then all of a sudden you're an IQP and you can sign off a particular system.
Okay.
You've got to demonstrate that you've got some competence in it. Well, you might have had to work in an industry for X amount of years, but they're the ones that sign off the compliance schedules, and then we get our annual building warrant of fitness.
Yep, I guess we've got our compliance requirements over here. Essential services report, sort of pretty similar by the sound of things. AESMR, I think is what they call it over here. So generally speaking, conducted mainly around the fire services. But yeah, very, very similar, I guess. Workplace health and safety has been around here for a very long time, as I sort of was touching on earlier on. And I think what you touched on before, we call it a maintenance plan, or maintenance fund, I guess, for the strata corporations, and it's compulsory. Some states have got different legislations. Yeah, it sounds like it's very, very similar, I guess, to some degree there. Look, Brad, I really want to say big thank you for coming on to the Building Manager podcast today, and thanks for sharing, you know, your information with our listeners here. Really admire, you know, how you're operating again this highly successful business right across the ditch. And you know, if there was one thing that you could share with our listeners about what a competent building manager looks like to you, what would that look like?
Just one.
Well, okay, make it two or three if you like.
It's a really good question. You know, it crosses our mind a lot too. And you know, over the years we've done a lot of work to try and really define what makes a good building manager. And a couple of years back, you know, to use a cooking term, we really boiled down or reduced down what we do as a building manager. And essentially, we boiled it down to three words, because I like those three word things that you can put on the wall and people understand easily. But it was to identify, solve, and communicate. And so we look for people who identify, obviously, is the first word. So they need to have they need to be able to see things from a distance, from up close, whatever that could be broken or need attention. They just need that fine eye for detail. So they can zoom in on something, but they can also think big picture for the building as well.
Mm.
Solve obviously comes down to being solution focused, but also being pragmatic. I mean, it's one thing to have a solution, but it might be the wrong solution, or it could be a solution that costs a heck of a lot more than what's required, you know, so it's got to be that practicality about it as well.
Definitely.
We won't talk about common sense, because I believe that died many years ago for another generation that's fast coming up behind us. Oh, actually, I shouldn't say that. So, yeah, we love you. It's great.
Of course.
And just finally, I guess being a great communicator as well, whether that's verbally or written, we've got to be able to communicate with our clients. So identify, solve, communicate. For us, that's the sort of the three word mantra, if you like. Being able to find the problem, provide a solution, and then let the client know how we've gone about things. So that that's kind of it for us. We have people that can fit those three boxes really.
Perfect. Yeah. Pretty good mottos, I think, or even values, if you want to put it that way. So, look, I really appreciate your time. I know it's a couple of hours difference over there, but nonetheless, thank you very much. As I said to you earlier on, love to catch up with you at another time, and we can talk about this association and other bits and pieces. But, Brady, congratulations on all you've done so far, and keep up the great work.
Yeah, well, Matt, thanks for having us on. Thanks for connecting on LinkedIn. I think that's where it all started. And it's been good to connect. And it's good to just have a chat with like-minded people from the industry. And and see where we're both at. We're obviously both facing the similar problems on both sides of the Tasman.
Yeah, most definitely.
So it's kind of milk and honey over at your end, and it's not all fire and brimstone over here. It's all we're all in the same boat, so to speak. So we're all just trying to push this industry forward and get good people around it. And
Definitely. No, well, let me tell you, there's not too much milk and honey at the moment, but the construction industry is absolutely booming. So
likewise.
Yeah. Thanks, Brady. Take care.
No worries, mate.
And we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah. Take care.
Righto. Bye for now. Wow, what an epic show of the Building Manager podcast, proudly recorded through Anchor by Spotify. So honoured to have been interviewing Brady Williams across the ditch in New Zealand, all about the building management industry in New Zealand, and just makes me very happy to see Brady with such success, going from that one building all the way to over 100 sites in the 15 years that he's been operating. So congratulations to Brady and his team. Thank you once again to all the listeners who have been emailing me and reaching out to me, either through LinkedIn, Facebook, or even via the podcast information, leaving messages. Just want to say thanks to the people that have reached out to want to advertise on the show, and I'll be getting back to you very shortly on how you can do that. Big shout out to all your building managers, not only here in Australia, but also now across the ditch, joining us on the Building Manager podcast. My name's Matt Osborne. I'm proud to be your host and look forward to speaking with you all once again next week. Take care. Bye for now.